From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what's up, good people? Well, it is Thursday. Yes, Thursday, February 13th, 2014. Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Man, did you see LeBron James last night? He was in vintage form, folks. What a game it was between the Heat and the Golden State Warriors. LeBron James, I think he backed up, folks, about that Mount Rushmore claim that he made earlier this week. He's good. He's really, really good. Fade away, fading to the left from the three-point line. Unbelievable. LeBron, hats off to you, brother. Hats off to you. But, folks, we have a ton to get to on today's show. We will talk about, you get to hear my sit-down. Those of you who are tuning in, you're doing so via internet. We are still undergoing station maintenance, here at WKAR. So thanks for tuning in online again, WKAR.org. You can also download the TuneIn Radio app and listen to us that way as well. And again, you also know that you can call in at 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527 to talk about anything that's on your noggin. We'll talk about MSU and Northwestern as the MSU men's basketball team. They get back to action tonight, a 7 p.m. tip-off against Northwestern. We'll give you a game preview of that one. And again, those of you who are tuning in online, you're in store for a treat because you'll get to hear my Corey Moore sit-down interview ahead of time. Again, that episode will air on WKAR TV tonight at 10 p.m., but you'll get to hear the interview here on WKAR Radio as kind of a little, you know, a treat for you all who are so dedicated and decide to tune in. You love Current Sports that much that you even tuned in online for these past few days, actually. I believe we'll be back to the regularly scheduled programming and back on the radio tomorrow, I believe. So we'll definitely, you get to hear that interview with Corey Moore as we talked about the Jrue Campbell situation that's going on right now. Of course, the Malik McDowell, as his mom doesn't want him to come to MSU. Corey addressed that as well. I mean, we really dove into a lot of things. You get to hear that in just a sec. It's also Throwback Thursday. A lot of good stuff to talk about, and you know, some sad news if you're not even just a baseball fan, but just a fan of sports in general. One of the clear-cut, classy guys in sports, Derek Jeter. He has decided to hang it up, folks. Derek Jeter will retire after this upcoming season. So sad stuff there. We'll definitely just dive into that as well. Well, without further ado, let's get to our current sports quick hit headliners, folks. Well, MSU hoop fans, you certainly have something to look forward to in the year 2018 as the MSU men's basketball team will join North Carolina, Florida, and Texas in a three-game, eight-day tour of New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles. Now, the matchups and times have yet to be announced, but ESPN is backing the event and will televise the games. Now, the four teams will arrive separately in New York and take part in a doubleheader on December 15th at Madison Square Garden. The next day, they'll tour the Freedom Tower at the 9/11 Memorial and visit Wall Street, see a Broadway show, and fly together to Chicago on a chartered plane. Good bonding time there. And fun will be involved as well. Second City Comedy Club in Chicago is on the itinerary with a December 18th doubleheader at the United Center, Disneyland, Warner Brothers Studio, and the Grammy Museum are a part of the Los Angeles leg, which wraps up in a December 22nd doubleheader at Staples Center. So that's pretty cool stuff. Mark Hollis was quoted as saying this one, this move was basically towards, giving back to the student athletes themselves and letting them enjoy themselves in their college experience. So great stuff there. Pretty unique to see that. All right. For the MSU football team, the work never stops, people. Jackson Lumen Christie's Kari Willis is the latest in-state player to receive a Spartan scholarship offer for 2015. Now, Willis is the ninth in-state player to receive an MSU scholarship, marking the busiest the Spartans have been with in-state offers since 2009. Now, Willis is a 6-foot, 200-pound athlete rushed for 1,565 yards with 27 touchdowns in 8 games last season. Now, the MSU, again, the MSU men's basketball team will try and keep pace with rival Michigan atop the Big Ten standings with a win tonight over visiting Northwestern. The Spartans will once again be without starters Keith Appling and Brandon Dawson and will look to sweep the season series with the Wildcats. MSU won 54-40 in Evanston on January 15th. That was without AP. Northwestern has bounced back as of late, winning 4 of their last 6 and 3 straight on the road. Now, tip is set for 7 p.m. tonight on the Big Ten Network. And the Lansing Eastern High School Athletic Hall of Fame induction ceremony will take place at 4:45 p.m. on February 21st during a dinner to be held at the high school. Those being honored will be introduced to the public between the Eastern versus Sexton girls and boys basketball game sometime from between 7 and 7:30 p.m. on that Friday at Don Johnson Fieldhouse. Those being inducted are Herb Austin, a wrestler, Marcel Carruthers, who played football, Sam Davis, also a wrestler, Greg Lloyd, basketball, and Rich Mull, swimming. So that's pretty cool stuff there. We'll try to get Marcel on the show to talk about that incredible honor. Of course, Marcel is now the head football coach over at Lansing Everett. So tips, hats off to all of those being inducted. Detroit, they broke their 3-game winning streak while handing Cleveland their season-high 4th straight win on Wednesday night. Now, the Cavs won 93-89. While the Pistons blew a 4th-quarter lead and shot 33% in the 2nd quarter. Ugh, that's a tough one there. All right, while the Pistons are likely going to ride the John Lawyer wave until the end of the season, big names are already expressing interest in the head coaching job, including former Memphis Grizzlies coach Lionel Hollis. Now, Hollis, a regular host on Sirius XM NBA Radio, he spoke with the vacancy saying, quote, "I haven't had any contact with him, nor has my agent. I've expressed to different media outlets that I would have an interest in listening to what they have to say. They have an intriguing team with some of the young big guys that they have," he went on to say. "So I would definitely be interested in talking with them. I'm flattered by all the non-decision makers coming out and saying that the job is mine and I'm the first choice and they are coming after me. Well, none of that has happened and it only matters what the Detroit Pistons are thinking. Again, I'm flattered with the respect and that has been shown me by some of the national media." Now, Hollins led the Grizzlies to 3 consecutive playoff berths his last 3 seasons in Memphis before being let go at the end of last year. I think that would be a great move if the Pistons can snag Lionel Hollis. All right, Michigan native and New York Yankee legend Derek Jeter is set to retire after the 2014 season. For his career, Jeter has 3,316 hits, 9th all-time, a .312 batting average, and 256 home runs. He ranks first in Yankees history in games played, at bats, hits, and stolen bases. Wow, Derek Jeter was something else, folks, and I'm certain that many people will be flocking to the television sets to watch him in action. His final year, he will be retiring after this upcoming season, folks. The opening game of the Sochi Olympics turned out to be a tune-up for the U.S. men's hockey team as they rolled to an easy 7-1 win over Slovakia. The Americans tallied 6 second-period goals to take control, led by Paul Stanley's 2 tallies. Now, Jonathan Quick, he made 22 saves for the Americans in his Olympic debut. The U.S. passed its first test with flying colors, but host Russia awaits for a marquee matchup on Saturday. And Team USA stood out and in every place at the podium in the first ever ski slope style competition Thursday afternoon, taking gold, silver, and bronze. Now, Josh Christensen won gold for the USA, followed by Gus Kenworthy and Nicholas Goper, who won silver and bronze for the States. Pretty cool stuff there. A clean sweep for the red, white, and blue. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on any of those, you know that number, yes, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Well, Alex and Matt now join me as we kick off our first segment of the show, and we're going to give you guys a MSU and Northwestern preview. That's right, the MSU men's basketball team. They get back to it tonight at 7 p.m., hosting Northwestern. The first time they played, guys, MSU with a 14-point win. Keith Appling and Gary Harris really carried the team, both in double-digit scoring. And Brandon Dawson also had a big game down low, led the team with 11 rebounds. Payne will now bring that, I think, more down low than Brandon Dawson did. I mean, Brandon Dawson did have a very, very good game in that one. But now you have a guy who's arguably more talented. He's definitely more talented than Brandon Dawson. And Adrian Payne has certainly been on a tear since he has gotten back for this MSU men's basketball team. The Wildcats, as we just stated, have been pretty good on the road recently. Again, they're trying to win their fourth road game. They've been doing it basically with defense, guys. Northwestern's defense has really done a 180 in these past few games, holding opponents to a combined 34.8% shooting in their last eight games. How they handled the Northwestern guards is something I will be also looking at. If you remember in that first game, Trey Demps was really the staple for that team in that game. And really, who has really come along for this team has been Jershon Cobb. And, you know, if Cobb, for those of you who remember last season with Northwestern, he had to sit out the entire season due to academic ineligibility. So he's back and has been, you know, really producing for this team. I believe he had 14 points in their last game against Nebraska. And, guys, I do think Gary Harris will get back on track. If you look at the first time they did play Northwestern, again, that 14-point win, Gary Harris, the guards really stepped up. Gary Harris and Keith Appling were great. Gary Harris did it both defensively and offensively, had a great game. I do think Adrian Payne has a big game also down low. And I think the Denzel, again, you never know with Denzel. You never know if it's going to be a great Denzel or a bad Denzel. It's a catch-22 every single game. But I do think Denzel, looking at Northwestern's makeup with the team, especially their guards, Demps and Cobb are not great defensive guards. I do think Denzel has an opportunity to have a big game tonight. I think that he will be the X factor tonight for him.
So Denzel Valentine is your X factor tonight.
He's my X factor tonight, yeah.
Okay. I looked at some game footage actually from the last time they played each other, and Michigan State did a lot of good ball movement. They had a lot of up and unders down low. So for me, a big thing is passing the ball. This is a smart Northwestern team that plays pretty good defense. I mean, last time Michigan State passed the ball around, they had to do up and unders down low. There were no easy buckets that Michigan State had. They had to have good shooting. They had to pass the ball around. Don't be fooled. Like you said, they're a pretty good team on the road. They just won one, so I wouldn't put it past them quite yet. But Northwestern, they shoot a lot of threes. They got a guy named Kelly Abrahamson who's really money from threes. And then they have their leading scorer, leading scorers, Drew Crawford, who's been pretty good. I think that basically the X factor for Michigan State is going to be Travis Trice, because with Appling out, they have to make sure that he can make a lot of plays. This is when Keith Appling was putting up 20 a game. This is when Keith Appling was in his prime playing without the injury. So I'm looking that Travis Trice will be the X factor for the Michigan State Spartans.
That's pretty good. I think both those picks are solid. I'm gonna have, as far as my X factor goes, I think it's got to be Adrian Payne, just because he didn't play in the last game. He's coming back. He's been on a tear, like you said. I mean, he was one of the only guys who was really going in the Wisconsin mm-hmm. game this weekend, because, I mean, nobody played well except for him and maybe Trice. So I think if he keeps this going, Northwestern has no one who can match him inside.
If you can dominate
the paint against Northwestern, you're probably going to win the game, because they're not a great shooting team. They play good defense. Chris Collins is an excellent coach. Obviously, he's from the Duke coaching tree, so he knows what he's doing. They've been playing better defensively. That's how they've won games. They're not going to light up the scoreboard. They win games in the 50s, sometimes in the 40s. You know, the last time they played, they scored 40 points. They shot terribly. Drew Crawford, like you mentioned, he went 1 of 8, had 6 points. I don't think that's going to happen again. I think he's going to have a little bit better game this time around. But if you can limit what they do offensively, you don't give them the easy buckets, which I think will not happen because Payne's back in there as the primary rim protector.
Right.
I think it's going to be tough for Northwestern to get enough offense to beat Michigan State in the Breslin.
Yeah, I think so, too. And when you look at it, you talk about those guards, when you talk about you know, a Drew Crawford and Gershon Cobb and Demps. I mean, those guys, they love to slash and get buckets down the middle of the paint. Now you got, I mean, the last time they played, you didn't have Adrian Payne sitting down there as an intimidating force. I mean, you had, you know, undersized guys. You had Gonda down there, Costello. I mean, but those guys can only do so much. It's a big difference when you got Adrian Payne, who is so freakishly athletic down low. He's going to be definitely an intimidating factor down there. So those guards, I think they're not going to run amok down there down low.
Right. Now you mentioned Adrian Payne being the big player no one can match up. What are your thoughts on Alex Ola down low?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's another point I want to bring up. When you look at Alex Ola, I mean, he's a guy who's over 7 feet. You know what I mean? But he has not been consistent throughout this season. Any person that's over 7 feet down low, any big guy down low that's over 7 feet, that's certainly intimidating. That's a big, big presence. But, again, we've seen Northwestern in these past few games. People have had success with them on getting the ball down low and scoring. So even though they're big, they still are not that fundamentally sound defensively.
Yeah.
Aids for
how
MSU.
Do you think he's going to match up against Ola?
I mean, how do I think Payne's going to match up? Very favorably. Yeah. It kind of, in my eyes,
he's too athletic.
It's sort of like Egwu for Illinois, mm-hmm. where even though you're big, there are no bigs in the Big Ten who are as skilled as Adrian Payne.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, and no one comes close. I mean, the guy is, you know, he can do things that guards can do in a 7-foot body.
Arguably,
and
he's probably the most talented big man in the nation.
Without a doubt. I wouldn't doubt it either. Yeah. I mean, there's nobody that comes to mind off the top of my head. I mean, maybe Randall, but then you get into the freshman stuff, and let's not go there. But as far as, you know, he's an experienced guy. He's a senior. He's going to know how to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 7-footer, yeah, it's you know, he's a presence. But I don't know if he's going to be enough to influence Adrian Payne and cause him to have a bad game.
Right, exactly. I've seen Alex Ola a few times this season. I mean, again, he's 7 feet. I've seen him only get like 4 rebounds throughout the entire game.
Right.
I'm sitting like, whoa, what in the world? He's 7 feet.
You should have rebounds falling into your lap.
Exactly, exactly. So, again, I think it definitely bodes well for Adrian Payne, especially the fact that Ola will have to – what makes Adrian Payne such a tough matchup, again, because he's so versatile. He can take you outside. He can hit that three. It's going to force Ola and that Northwestern team to try, and it brings them out from the paint to try to guard him. And then if you come out on him, he can take you back down low and burn you that way. So he's so versatile.
Yeah.
I think Northwestern, I think you'll see zone a few times tonight. I definitely see that.
Yeah, and it's funny you guys say that. He's unlike any big man. Take a look out for this big man in 2016. Thaw Maker, 7'1", plays like a guard. 7'1", plays like a guard. Dribbles, passes. Keep a lookout for him.
Where is he from?
He's from, I believe he's somewhere in the South. I don't know off the top of my head, but I just remember watching his. This guy will be like a freakishly guard version of Kevin Durant coming up.
That's high praise. High praise right there. We'll definitely be on the lookout for that. But yeah, you talk about Alex Ola. I mean, again, 7 feet. You know, Romanian. I mean, he definitely was a highly touted recruit coming to Northwestern. I just haven't seen anything consistently from him. And you talk about this Northwestern team again. New coach Chris Collins, they're still trying to find their style and their type of play here. It's still an adjustment period for them every single game. When you're going against an experienced MSU team at home, I definitely would give MSU the advantage tonight. I do think, though, if you look at the history between Northwestern and MSU, especially at the Breslin Center, MSU has gotten them, but they have been pretty close games. They've been very entertaining games. Would that be the case tonight? I'm going with MSU by double digits. I say MSU by 12, guys, tonight.
I was going to say MSU by 11.
Definitely. Alex?
I'd say MSU by 15.
Wow. By 15. Gotcha. So we have MSU winning
at home.
By
they're coming
digits.
Off angry off that Wisconsin thing. Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. I'd like to see Gary Harris bounce back.
Right. This would be
more than anything, though, I'd like to see Gary Harris attack the basket.
Right, right. Exactly.
And last time they played, this was a team where he did that.
Yeah, this would be a great game for Gary and other players to gain some confidence back, specifically for Gary, because he has not had a great past few games, you know what I mean? Especially looking at last game where he shot terribly, really struggled to find his offense. I think this is a perfect game for him to get back on track at home, and I think he does do that. He will do that. So, entertain. Again, that's 7 p.m. tonight at the Breslin Center. Current Sports will be there with coverage of that one. So, all right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, you will get to hear my sit-down with Corey Moore, former Virginia Tech defensive player standout. He actually was Defensive Player of the Year in the entire nation, folks, during his senior season. A great guy. He gave me some insight into the he gives all of us some insight into the whole J. Rue Campbell situation is going on. You know, we give a peek into recruiting when you talk about Malik McDowell, who's still not signed anywhere yet, his national letter of intent. You'll get to hear what Corey's thoughts on it. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, Corey Moore, he was an unbelievable player, folks, back in the day. He played for Virginia Tech back in the 90s up until the year 2000. So from 96 to 2000, he was an unbelievable defensive player. Actually, won Defensive Player of the Year his senior year, was drafted into the NFL and played for the Miami Dolphins and the Buffalo Bills. And now he finds himself on the campus of Michigan State University as an academic advisor. Well, Corey was my guest for Current Sports TV, and him and I sat down yesterday and chatted about multiple things, including J.Ru Campbell. Of course, J.Ru Campbell is the Caztech QB standout who is undergoing some charges based on the video of him body slamming a security guard during the school day hours. Now, Corey saw the footage, and we began our conversation right after I showed him that footage to get his thoughts.
Well, when I initially saw the video, I was a little bit disturbed. You know, a kid as high-profile athlete as he is, even being a high school student and a juvenile, I was really disturbed by that. But what was most disturbing to me about that, he could have seriously injured that guy. And to even the days after that, I saw that some coaches in his corner took up for him. His mom was kind of defending him, in which I think she has a right to, and she should. But what I was disappointed with, even after the event, that nobody held them accountable for that. And so I was a little bit disappointed with that. I saw a lot of blogs where MSU fans were saying, hey, let's just cut ties with that kid. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because I'm all about giving kids a second chance. But I was disappointed that no one has really come out and make him and hold him accountable for that behavior, because that's kind of sickening. And then, like I said, he could have seriously injured that guy.
Right, definitely. And, you know, Campbell has not released a statement. And, of course, Michigan State has not released a statement because he is just a verbal commit. I mean, he hasn't signed a national letter of intent, so they have made no comment on it. For you, I mean, if looking at this thing from, you know, the outside, Corey, I got to ask you, when you see a video like that and you see this is not J.Ru's first incident, he also had an incident earlier this season where he was running, you know, how you supposed to shake handshakes, you know, at the end of a football game, and he actually got into it with one of the players and actually punched one of the players and had to be held back by the coaching staff. I mean, that is also caught on video. This is all caught on video. When you look at a kid like this who, you know, has a history of lashing out, and you see, you know, what has taken place recently, would you cut ties with him?
I would, but obviously he needs someone to step in and teach him and lead him the right way. To me, it says something about, okay, what are the coaches doing or not doing with him? Because you can't allow your star player to get away with stuff like that. You know, at some point you have to step in and say, hey, no player is above the team. And I think now's the time for them to nip that in the bud, because it's only going to further hurt him down the line. Mm-hmm. I mean, even now it could affect, you know, if schools continue to recruit him or back off of him. And that's kind of a, you know, a sad commentary, because that may not even be reflective of who that young man is. But obviously there's some issues there. And, you know, failure to address those issues and get that young man help can hurt him down the road. And that's what I would like to see.
Yes,
not
definitely.
Necessarily cutting ties with the kid.
Right. I'm a firm believer that everybody deserves second chances. And we still haven't heard his side of the story either.
Right.
So, you know, there's always two sides to every story. Now, you know, another big story around the area, Corey, has to do with another recruit, Malik McDowell. Malik McDowell is a defensive end for Southfield High School. And National Signing Day was last week. And Malik McDowell verbally came out and said that, hey, I want to come to MSU. And he did it in front of his dad. His dad seemed to support him. But there was somebody else who had something else to say. His mom. His mom does not want Malik coming here to play football. And she has not signed the national letter of intent. And actually, news came out this week that he will also be taking visits to Ohio State and Florida State and some other schools in the coming week. So, I mean, you were a highly touted recruit. You actually went to Haywood High School in Brownsville, Tennessee. A three-star recruit, Corey. When you hear about parents, is there a line? Do they get too involved in the recruiting process?
I think there are some parents that absolutely get a little bit too involved. But then I also think that there are some students, some young athletes that just aren't mature enough to understand that and need the parents to, you know, kind of hold their hand and walk them through it. In the case of Mr. McDowell, that he seems very excited about coming to MSU. So that story just was kind of strange to me. I was actually able to listen to some radio audio where his mom gave an interview, and it seems like that she is dead set for whatever reason about him not coming to MSU. You know, she won't come out and, you know, give the reason, but based on some of the audio, she was basically saying that she had a bad experience of doing her visit here at MSU involving an MSU coach, but she won't say, you know,
exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. So it just kind of makes you wonder what, you know, what happened to kind of, you know, put MSU on the outs with her. But the sad part about it is, you know, Malik seems to be set on coming to MSU, really wants to be part of MSU. I think his coaches and some of his teammates from Southfield have already said that they've known all along that's where he wanted to be. Dad came out last week and supported him, but mom is the one holding it up.
It's sad to see that.
It really is.
You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, I mean, you would think that if the kid wants to come to a certain school, at the end of the day, I think the parents do have a certain say. I want to get your take on it because, I mean, how big were your parents involved in your process of choosing Virginia Tech?
Well, my mom was with me every step of the way, but she ultimately, you know, left it up to me. She said it was my decision because I'm going to have to spend the next 4 or 5 years at that university, and I have to make sure that I'm comfortable there. And I think this should be the case with Malik. I mean, he has to decide where he wants to spend the next, you know, 4 to 5 years, you know, if he leaves early, 3 years or whatever, not mom. You know, and I think, you know, being his parent, being his mom, dad, just like dad did, she should be right by his side, regardless of how she feels about MSU. If he's happy, she should be happy.
Were there any one of your family members who didn't want you to go to VT?
No, not at all.
They were all supportive. Gotta love that. Gotta love that. Well, I tell you what, you had quite the career when you were at Virginia Tech, Corey. I mean, the Narduszki Award, your senior year, which goes to the Defensive Player of the Year in the entire nation. You had 31 sacks when you talk about your junior and senior season combined. I mean, what do you miss the most about college football?
I would say I miss playing, but I'm too old for that right now. Body can't take it. But, you know, I'm a college football junkie. I watch a lot of college football during the fall season. I love college sports in general, so in a way, I still feel a sense of connection, and Virginia Tech will always be family to me. But I miss being away from that place. That's the one thing I miss. All of the coaches, most of the coaches that were there at Virginia Tech when I played there are still there, so it's still that connection. But it's just Blacksburg and Virginia Tech campus is just a special place. So just being away from there, you know, I really miss that.
Definitely. And like I said, you were very, very good. I mean, Defensive Player of the Year, your senior year. I mean, you were drafted in NFL. You went to, of course, you played for the Bills and the Dolphins. I mean, Corey, talk about your NFL career and how hard was it for you to come to grips when it all ended?
It was fun. It was fun getting paid for something that you like doing. But it was very business, and so it was a lot different than college. And I was way young, 21 at the time, and so I didn't have a worry in the world. And then never was seriously injured in college, and then get to the pros and nagging. I broke my ankle my rookie year, came back probably a little bit too early for that. Then go my second year, training to come back, tear my ACL, try to make a comeback. And it just wasn't happening for me. And then for me, being someone that was already undersized, it was difficult for me to try to make a comeback. Because one thing about it, if you're not healthy, there's younger guys behind you that they're looking to bring in behind you. Mm-hmm. As far as me just walking away from it, it wasn't that hard for me. Because I've always said that, you know, football and athletics didn't define me. I always pride myself in being involved with other things and preparing for life after, you know, sports. And so when I made a decision to walk away, I was looking for what I was going to do next.
And you know, it's so crazy because, I mean, life has come full circle now. And you're here right here at Michigan State University. How did you end up as an academic advisor?
Well, I came here, I was working at Ohio State, and then I was looking for grad programs once I made the decision that I wanted to work in college administration.
Right.
And MSU was one of the places that I applied, and I came up on a visit. And it almost didn't come because it was snow on the ground, very, very cold. And so that almost deterred me from coming here. But I came here and I came up for a preview day for the master's program that I had applied to. And everybody here made me feel so welcome. And what I liked about it the most, no one saw me as a football player, because I really hate that. I'm more than just a football player. And so they didn't make me feel like that. And so I knew right away that this was the place for me. My original plan was to just come here, finish my master's, and go back down south and work at a smaller university. And when I came here, it was 2006, and I haven't left yet. They won't let me leave, and I like it. So, you know, I feel like part of the MSU family now.
That is great stuff. And you talk about the MSU family. Of course, the MSU football team is just coming off a Rose Bowl win. That defense was so good, Corey. The number one defense in the entire nation. And you played on a very, very good defense when you played at Virginia Tech. Did that defense that you saw from Michigan State this season, did it remind you anything of the defenses you played on?
It really did. But what I really enjoyed, I mean, this was an exciting football season for me, being able to watch, you know, the Spartans do their thing and march on to the Rose Bowl and actually win the Rose Bowl. It brought back a lot of good memories for me. Right. I mean, the defense really carried the team. And not to take anything away from the offense, because it was good to see the offense get better and better as the year went along. I thought the running back got better, became one of the better running backs in the country. Quarterback played out of his mind. I thought he got better as the season went along. And then the receivers really started to step up as well. But defensively, I mean, they basically shut every opponent down. I was really, really impressed from the front seven all the way to the defensive backfield. I thought that was the best defensive backfield since I've been at Michigan State. Because when I first came here, I don't...
You're like, I don't know about
I wasn't too sure about the defense here. But, I mean, the Coach Narduzzi and his staff, I mean, they've done a great, great job. D'Antonio has done a great job with just building a great program. I think Michigan State is here to stay on the national football scene.
Yes, they certainly turned some heads, to say the least. Now,
definitely.
You know, Corey, before you let the 12th man get at you, I got to ask you, you know, this is something we talked about on the radio show. The game of football nowadays is being very, very monitored, especially when you talk about helmet-to-helmet contact today. We see in the NFL today that even if you even think about going near the head, you're getting a flag thrown and you possibly may be fined when you wake up on Monday morning. What are your thoughts on the way the game is being called today, and are they going overboard with it?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that they're going overboard, but I think they're being a lot more cautious than in the past. And I think you see that because once players get out of, you know, their playing days, you see a lot of older guys that have, you know, injuries that, you know, affect their way of living. And I think in lieu of that, I think they're being cautious about, you know, guys not taking shots at other players. But I definitely think that has affected the play. You see more offensive points scored than ever. You see defensive players a little bit more cautious about how they tackle. You know, not to just – I think they're more cautious about getting fined or getting ejected from the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of, you know, softens the play up a little bit. It's a physical game, and I think, you know, as a defensive player, you want to play with reckless abandon is what I used to say. And so when you're out there playing about worried about whether you're going to get fined or not, I think that kind of takes a little, you know, edge or chip off the shoulders of defensive players. So
I want to step into the mentality of when you play it real quick for you, Corey, because, I mean, you were a great defensive player. I mean, what was your mentality? You talk about reckless abandonment. I mean, were you just out there trying to take off anybody's heads who came your way? I mean, talk about that.
My mentality, we played as a group, and our mentality was get to the ball, get the ball carrier down, and get the ball. And if that means bringing the pain to the ball carrier, that's what we played with, reckless abandon and intent to not necessarily harm, but to strike fear in our opponent.
So with the way that the game is being called today, how would that change the way you would have played back
then? I don't think it
would have changed.
My play wouldn't have changed.
It wouldn't have changed at all.
My mentality wouldn't have changed. I don't think you can change your mentality. But I see guys now that have been, you know, particularly safety play, that have been big physical safety. When I look at guys like Cam Chancellor, who played at Virginia Tech, he's a big physical guy. I mean, 6'2", 230. And for a safety, that's like linebacker size.
Yeah.
And he's a hitter. But even in his play, I see that he's more cautious and not to, you know, strike guys in fear of getting fined and stuff like that. And you see a lot of guys in the league now, they're you know, maybe take a step or two back when they're tackling and keeping their head up and tackling properly, because, you know, they don't want to get fined.
Right, right. That is so true. I mean, like I said, I mean, guys left and right are being, you know, the flag is being thrown and they're being fined left and right. Again, for you, that's very impressive, though. I mean, that you went, because I've talked to other players who have played the game and are now, you know, moved on in life, and they probably would monitor the way they've been played because it would affect their pocketbooks. But that's pretty impressive. Very impressive, Corey. Well, I tell you what, let's let the 12 men get at you, because there are a lot of really good questions that that they want to inquire about. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go anywhere, because the 12th man starts right now. All right, well, it is time for the 12th man. And for this week, Corey, we're going to go to our social media. And I know we just talked about social media, right? But we're going to go to social media. We're going to go to Facebook.com/currentsports and also my Twitter page at AlMartinWKER. I tell you what, the people, they have some pretty interesting questions for you. Corey, first of all, here's Kwame from Detroit. He wants to get your thoughts on Michael Sam. Now, for those of you who don't know who Michael Sam is, Michael Sam, he came out as gay last weekend, actually Sunday. He announced that he was gay. He is a SEC Defensive Player of the Year. And what makes it so interesting, he will be the first active gay NFL prospect in sports. Unbelievable stuff. What are your thoughts on Michael when he came out?
I was really kind of surprised a little bit. Because particularly he's got the combine coming up, which is like a week-long interview process for all 32 teams. But then I thought it was very, very brave, because it may, regardless of people say the NFL is ready for, you know, gay player or whatnot, or it's not going to affect his draft status, but I think it will, because I think, you know, the media circus surrounding whatever team he goes to, I think that's going to take away from, you know, the real issues around the team. And I think some of his teammates may resent that, because they don't want to have to address, you know, we got a gay teammate. I just don't think that, I don't care what locker room it is, I don't think any team is necessarily ready for that. But I think it was very courageous on his part. And I think if he's happy, be happy.
So from an attention standpoint, you think some NFL teams will shy away?
I definitely think they will. And you've already seen a couple GMs that have already come out, and they won't put a name to it, but already come out and kind of said, you know, just taking them off their draft board. Because if you think about it, if you're a struggling franchise and trying to build a successful team, that's one less distraction that you would probably want to deal with. Because like I said, I think it's going to be an everyday media circus. You know, how are you guys dealing with a gay teammate? And I don't care whether he's gay or not. If he can play and help the team win, that's what it should be about. But unfortunately, in today's society, that's not what it's going to be about. It's going to be about his sexual orientation.
You know, and something, Corey, that we've talked about on the radio show, which is Current Sports Radio, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock on AM 870, is the issue with how teammates will react to having a gay teammate. Because, you know, in the NFL, I mean, it's known as such a macho sport. And to have a gay teammate now enter that locker room, for for someone who's played in the NFL, I mean, have you and your teammates talked about that at all when you were playing? Or?
Well, I remember when I played, and I played with a lot of good veterans in Buffalo, and a lot of veterans took me under their wings. And I remember that there would be rumors within our own locker room of gay players on other teams and stuff like that, but they weren't out. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like it's a new thing. Because you got to think about it. Who wants to be, you know, judged? Who wants to be, you know, run away? I mean, professional football, it's a way that these, and they make a living playing football.
Right.
So you don't want your personal life to affect the way that you make a living. And unfortunately, I think with him coming out, it may possibly affect, you know, him making a living as a professional football player.
Yes, we will certainly see. Thanks a lot, Kwame, for your question. Growing up moments. This is from Sylvia in DeWitt. She wants to know, with everything that's going on with J.Rue Campbell and now Malik McDowell, she calls these, you know, growing up moments. I mean, what was your growing up moment when you were coming up playing a game of football, Corey?
Let's see. Well, I can actually sympathize with those young men, because, you know, being young, you make a lot of bad decisions. And I think, like I said previously, I think that the adults in J.Rue's life just hasn't checked his behavior, haven't held him accountable for that unruly behavior. And I think now this is a teachable moment, a learning moment for him. And unfortunately, it's at a time where he has all the attention on him.
Yeah.
But he needs to understand that you know, being a D1 prospect and being a top recruit is a privilege, not a right. And so I think for me, being a grown-up moment, probably was heading into my senior year. You know, I lost my grandmother, who was one of my biggest fans, probably my biggest fan, and kind of helped raise me. And so that was very difficult for me, and I kind of lost my way a little bit and, you know, didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. But I always thought back to her always believing in me and not wanting to let her down. And my senior year of high school, that kind of helped me stay focused and forced me to mature because I didn't have Grams to lean on it like I used to. So for me, that was a moment of clarity and forced me to having to grow up and mature faster.
Yes, Corey Moore, folks, a former Virginia Tech standout and played in the NFL for two teams, the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins. And Matt, you know what? We were just talking off air just a minute ago, and you had a pretty impressive account from a certain writer, right?
Yeah, they were talking about Corey Moore in his heyday, and they were discussing Jadeveon Clowney, the defensive end from South Carolina, who has been projected to be like a top five pick since he pretty much went to college.
Since he was birthed on this
earth. Yeah, pretty much.
He's pretty good.
But they were talking about how quick Clowney is off the ball, and they said he's as fast as anyone since Corey Moore.
Wow. Since Corey Moore.
Not as fast, but the fastest guy since Corey Moore. So
wow.
He was quick off the ball, and if you know, it takes 2 seconds to look up his highlights and notice how fast he was off the jump. The guy, boy, oh boy, he's in the backfield before they hand the ball off. Yeah. I mean, he was a freak of nature, absolutely.
He was very, very, very talented. It's just so sad to see players who are so talented, you know, in college, and you know, they get to the pros in whatever sport it may be. And, you know, just things don't, you know, it's not a fairy tale land like everybody would think it would be, especially a guy like Corey Moore, who is a very, very good college player. So, but yeah, again, you can catch that episode tonight, Current Sports TV, tonight at 10 p.m. And you get to catch that episode. You guys got an exclusive sneak peek into that interview today for tuning in online. But again, 10 p.m. on WKR TV tonight. You also get to see some high school highlights. You get to hear from Tom Izzo as they prepare for tonight's game. So check it out. Don't want to miss that. All right, well, let's hit the break when we come back. It's Thursday, so that means it's Throwback Thursday, where we take a look on what happened in sports history on this Thursday. That's always a fun time. We'll also talk about Michael Sam and Derek Jeter retiring. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports, we'll be right back.
Sweat the technique.
Man, I love that joint. Don't sweat the technique, folks. All right, welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, it's that time of the show on each and every Thursday where we look back into sports history. We go into our current sports time machine and look back on what happened on this day in sports history. So, Matt, what happened on this Thursday, February 13th, in sports history?
February 13th has been a busy day. Very busy. We will start out going back to the 1920s, a big decade for February 13th, breakthroughs for the African-American community. We start out in 1920 with the National Negro Baseball League, organized today, February 13th, 1920.
How about that?
3 years later, the New York Renaissance, also known as the Renaissance Big Five, become the first black professional basketball team in 1923.
Wow, on the same day this
same happened. Day, 3 years later.
Wow, that's pretty, pretty cool stuff. Oh, yeah. And that, you know, it's Black History Month, so that's fitting.
Fitting, exactly. That's fitting. Yeah. I thought so, too. All right, 1937, the NFL's Boston Redskins moved to Washington. I had no idea that they were...
Wow.
They were a transplant team.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. No, Boston Redskins.
The Boston Redskins doesn't... I mean, even with the Boston Red Sox, that still sounds weird.
Yeah, it does.
1977. Perhaps you know him. Dr. J, Julius Erving, played in his first NBA All-Star game. All he did was win MVP with 30 points and 12 rebounds.
Dr. J was so... You know what? Dr. J, I think, he's one of those legends that I think is so underrated. I mean, you hear, of course, the Birds, the Magics, and the Jordans, and, you know, I mean, those especially those three, you hear them all the time, but Dr. J's name, I think, should be brought up more for what he did for the game.
He kind of gets lost in the shuffle because he played in the ABA.
Yeah, he played in the ABA, exactly.
And they kind of gloss over that when they look through the history books because it wasn't the NBA.
Exactly. And, you know, he was such a great – I was watching a documentary the other day, guys. I forget the name of it. It's on Netflix, though. I think it's called – Fathers of the Sport. That's what it's called. If you haven't seen Fathers of the Sport, guys, and you're a big basketball fan – go check that out. But they give a profile of Rucker Park, you guys know, in New York, which is probably the most famed street ball court in the entire nation. Unbelievable stuff there. But and they talk about how Dr. J used to just come there and just dominate games. I mean, and people would flock. I mean, these games were kind of like, you know, sometimes bigger than college basketball games sometimes. I mean, people from the neighborhood would come. They would be sitting on rooftops and buildings just looking at the game. I mean, they have pictures of this. It is unbelievable. Stuff, but yeah, Dr. J would just come near and put on the show. He was unbelievable, man.
Can you imagine playing pickup basketball with Dr. J?
Like, I would have to pinch myself. That's a dream.
I mean, even now, when he's, you know, in his 60s,
right?
It would
right.
still be the, you know, thrill of a lifetime.
Exactly.
Absolutely. All right.
Unbelievable.
We'll move on. 1982 and 1990, and I'm grouping these together because February 13th is a really good day for New York Islander great Brian Trottier. In 82, he scores 5 goals against the Philadelphia Flyers, and then in 1990, he scores his 500th career goal in the NHL.
Wow.
On
the
same day? 8 years later on the same day.
Wow, that's pretty, pretty cool. Brian Trottier. Wow.
It's his lucky day, obviously.
February 13th. Definitely.
Not so lucky for Larry Bird in 1990. His free throw streak ends at 71. He made 71 in a row. He was 7 short of Calvin Murphy's record of 78.
Does that record still stand today?
It might. I have to double check that. But even if it doesn't, 78 in a row is crazy. Unfortunately for Bird's opponent, the Houston Rockets, he still managed to drop 38 and 14 rebounds. So it's not like he's had a very bad game. He just just missed that free throw. Oh boy.
Yeah.
And I believe you have one that's more of the musical variety.
Yes. You know what? This is what I think. I always think that Whitney Houston's version of the national anthem, when she sung it in the Super Bowl, is, to me, that's the all-time greatest version of the national anthem. But you know what? This one is definitely in my top 5 list. Marvin Gaye in 1983 sang the U.S. national anthem at the NBA All-Star Game.
Can you see by the dawn's early light what so
how about that? You know, that's the only national anthem that I know that people were actually screaming, as you hear, during the national anthem. Usually it's quiet, you know what I mean? But you can hear women there just going crazy as he sings the national anthem. Marvin Gaye, I mean, that's one of a kind.
And it is, and it takes some serious, you know, star power to kind of rearrange the national anthem.
Right,
it's like
exactly.
You don't normally hear it like that.
No, you
maybe
don't.
Maybe ever. I think it takes a pretty rare breed to decide, you know what, I'm going to turn the national anthem on its head and do it in my style.
Yeah.
And have people go absolutely crazy for
They
it.
Went crazy for it, as you hear. I mean, yeah, and it was, you know, kind of a slow Marvin Gaye style. It was
right.
It was great. It was
way
top,
to go.
Top 5 there.
Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
Legend. All right. 1995. We'll jump to 1995. The AP voted the men's UConn basketball team number 1, marking the first time one school has been ranked number 1 in both men's and women's college basketball.
Wow.
Of course. I feel like UConn's women's basketball has been number 1 probably for the last 20 years.
Forever.
They're just constantly number 1.
Yeah.
Doesn't even matter who's
Shout
on
out
the team.
To Mike. He loves the UConn women's
oh,
basketball
my
team.
Goodness.
Mike loves them.
How can
yeah.
you not? I mean,
they're great.
Just a machine. All right. 2003, Teresa Phillips becomes the first woman to coach a Division I men's basketball game, but her Tennessee State Tigers lose 71-56 to Austin Peay. In 2005, the mailman calls it a day. Karl Malone retires after 19 seasons.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow, the mail. I used to love Karl Malone, man. Arguably, you know, him and Charles Barkley up there with, I think LeBron James will probably eclipse both of them, but man, two of the greatest fours to ever play the game. Karl Malone, he was great. Shout out to John Stockton, though. Without John Stockton.
He never got that ring, though.
I know.
Him and Charles Barkley never got the ring.
Because of Jordan. Michael Jordan. He's
done
that to a lot of people.
Pretty much. Oh, Carmelo and John Stockton. Yeah. They're still running the pick and roll. All right. 2008, Roger Clemens denies having taken performance-enhancing drugs in a testimony before Congress. We all know how that worked out. Way to go, Roger.
Yep.
2010, Apollo Anton Ono ties Bonnie Blair with his sixth medal as the most decorated U.S. Winter Olympian of all time when he won a silver in the men's 1,500 meters after two South Korean skaters fell.
Wow.
Of course, now we know Apollo Ono as that guy on the Subway commercials.
Exactly. He's
a lifetime contract. Yeah. You win six medals in the Olympics. You're going to get that $5 footlong money for the rest of your life.
The rest of your life.
Oh,
I love it.
Gosh. 2011, the Wizards snap a 25-game road losing streak when they beat the Cavs 115-110. And then the funniest thing that's ever happened on February 13th, Orlando Magic forward Hedo Turkoglu suspended 20 games by the NBA for testing positive for steroids. Hedo Turkoglu, who has the physique of a couch potato, maybe the least likely person to ever use steroids ever,
he gets
20
tested.
Games.
Oh, my goodness. And you never hear about that in the game of basketball.
You never do.
Never do. Why in the world did you take it? Why are you taking steroids? That makes no sense. Hedo Turkoglu of all
people. It
doesn't
show, Hedo. They're not working.
No.
Maybe get a different brand of steroids or something.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Call him A-Rod or something, man. Oh, my goodness. Crazy stuff. Alex?
Yeah, I got one throwback. In 1954, on March 2nd, Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points. But on today's date in 1954, Frank Selby of Furman University scored 100 points, but no one knows about it because he wasn't D1. He's a D2 player scoring 100 points in a game, 1954.
Wow, really?
So, yeah, just scouted that one out.
What's it? What school was that?
Newberry College in South Carolina.
Newberry College.
Now, he's been passed, right?
Wow.
By the kids from Grinnell.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, from Grinnell. Yeah. Wow, that's interesting stuff.
Right.
A lot. This is a very busy
day.
Thursday. Yeah, very
and
busy.
And actually
day.
Today, a little outside sports, but Mitt Romney declared his presidency.
Really?
On this day. Yeah.
On this day.
On his bit.
That's some exterior knowledge there. Yeah. Good stuff, Alex. All right, well, there you have it. Throwback Thursday, folks. If we miss something, you always know that you can call in and, you know, test your sports knowledge, sports history knowledge, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Guys, really briefly, we have about 9 minutes left in the show. Something we didn't get to talk about and discuss yesterday, a very, very interesting topic that many have been talking about has to do with Michael Sam. Now, Michael Sam, of course, the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, he came out as gay on Sunday, making him he will be the first active football player to do so, right on the heels of the NFL draft. And you know what? He actually came out to his dad, I believe, that Tuesday of last week. And after hearing his son's announcement that he is an openly gay NFL prospect, Michael Sam Sr., he told the New York Times that he was uncomfortable with his son's sexual orientation, saying, quote, "I'm old school. I'm a man and a woman type of guy." That's what he told the Times. Now, granted, the Sams have had a restrained relationship for a long period, and Sam Jr. even told the Times that "I'm closer to my friends than I am to my family." Interesting stuff there, guys. You know what? When I heard about Sam's father and his comments about this, and you know, I'm an old school type of guy, I'm a man and woman type of guy. For me, I thought it was rather idiotic of him to come out and say that to a reporter. Something like that. If you do feel that way, don't put it out there, you know, that negative energy out there to the public, especially a journalist. I mean, if he did feel uncomfortable in any kind of way, which I can see that to a degree. I want to get into that in just a sec, but I just thought it was rather idiotic of him, and Charles Barkley talked about it too. I mean, he had Charles Barkley, I believe, on Dan Le Batard's show, and Charles felt the same way I did. When I first heard him, I'm like, why would you tell the reporter that? And Charles Barkley called him an idiot too. I mean, he was like, why would you say that to a reporter? I mean, that's just, I thought it was really sticky there, but I can understand to a degree where Sam Sr. is coming from, and I'll explain that in a minute. But what were your guys' reactions to us to his comments, his father's comments?
Yeah, I think calling it idiotic is putting it nicely.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's nice your
there.
Son.
Right.
And that's, you know, you can feel how you want to feel. Like, I'm not saying he, you know, should be totally open to it. If he doesn't feel that way, he doesn't feel that way. But to put it out in the public forum is reprehensible. This is your kid.
Exactly.
I mean, and you know, it kind of treads a similar line as the Malik McDowell situation, where it's just parents saying things directly to the press that should be in-house matters.
Right.
And maybe it's because, you know, I don't know how many interviews Michael Sam Sr. has been giving. Or, you know maybe he's just not used to this world because he's certainly getting thrown into it right now because this is a huge story and he's going to be badgered for interviews for probably the foreseeable future. But I don't think it takes any media savvy to know that kind of issue is an in-house family thing.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Should be handled behind closed doors.
Yeah, there's certain things you just do not put out in the public forum. You just do not say. If you felt that way, Sam Sr., okay, keep it to yourself.
Have a conversation with your son.
Yeah, talk to your son about it, you know what I mean? But don't put it out there for, you know, the world to see that, you know, he comes off as you know the word I'm using, that A word. He comes off that way. Alex?
Yeah. The biggest thing I would say is, for his comments calling idiotic, like you said, it's like a little sensitivity here. It's your son. Like, you have to understand that you have to be supportive no matter what, or else he's going to change too. But I think there was, instead of going out to the public, there was a different way he could have handled it. Maybe instead of declaring that it was idiotic, he could have explained to Sam why he thought. I mean, instead of just saying it was idiotic, he gave like a little brush reasoning on it. A little more into detail on why it matters to him as his father, more in his parental role, rather than what will actually affect Sam. But I think that overall, that with future teammates and like the locker room and whatnot, yeah, that's going to create tension. And all the players so far have been very supportive over Twitter, and you've seen tweets here and there from athletes.
Right.
But there's no easy way around this, regardless of what his feelings are. How else are you supposed to display that aside from, I mean, to the public? I don't know. How else are you supposed to display that?
I want
to
ask you guys, before we get off the air real quick, I mean, granted, I don't think neither three of us are fathers yet, but if we did have a kid and I had a son and, you know, it comes out, so a situation, I want to put us into Sam Sr.'s shoes for a second. If your son came to you and told you that, hey, Dad, I'm gay, what would your guys' reaction be to it? Now, for me, I'm going to be like Sam Sr. here. I'm not as far as I'm a man and woman type of guy. From this standpoint, I would be a bit uncomfortable because as a parent, you want the best for your kid. And knowing that he is coming out as gay, life is going to be harder for him. The scrutiny and the criticism that he is going to have to go through now being a gay man, and in Sam's case, a gay black man, which can that adds to it. I mean, African American males in general in this nation have it as a hard time as it is. Now you're adding another realm of being gay to it. I mean, society is becoming more accepting over the years of it, but it's still a lot of backlash on this subject. I would just be a little uncomfortable because now my son has to deal with another hurdle in his life. And you want your kid, let's be honest here, you want your kid to have a smooth life. You want to have an easy life. This complicates that. So I would be uncomfortable in that regard.
Yeah, I'd be uncomfortable, but I would say I would note all those things on how it will affect his life and maybe his career. But in terms of who he likes,
I definitely support him, but I would be uncomfortable because his life definitely changes in many regards.
His life would certainly change, and you have to acknowledge that. But at the same time, you know, he's a trailblazer. He's going to be the guy who makes other young athletes, you know, black, white, whatever, gay, straight, whatever. It's going to make it easier on them to live their lives openly. So I think it's going to be harder for him. He's going to have to make sacrifices going forward. But at the same time, he's going to do so many good things for the gay community going forward that I think ultimately you just have to be proud of him.
You know,
I mean,
for being
true to himself, for not, you know, kind of cowering to, you know, the fear of coming out and being gay in the public eye, being an NFL player who's admittedly openly gay. I think you'd have to be proud of him for taking that challenge because it's going to be
definitely.
Hard.
It's
You're
definitely
right.
Admirable.
It's definitely going to be difficult for him.
Right.
And, you know, we've already seen some of a little bit of backlash here and there just from random GMs anonymously and stuff like that. But, you know, to take that, knowing what's coming with it and to be happy, you know, doing it, coming out, being yourself in the public eye, I think you have to stand by your kid. I'd be incredibly proud of him because
it takes a lot of courage.
It is. It really does. And you know, he's the first of hopefully many because I think there's going to be more and more going forward. So.
Right. Definitely. I definitely do as well. And you know, it was a compelling interview from one of Sam's teammates on ESPN, and one of his teammates said, you know, Sam definitely saved a few lives with this one because there. I mean, people commit suicide over this type of stuff, being gay, and it's such a harsh society that we live in today, and people are scrutinized for, you know, being gay and other things, you know, on various accounts. And if he saves one life, he's done his job. He's done more than enough. All right. Well, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in today's Current Sports. Peter Warf, our station manager here at WKR. Aaron Young for engineering. Matt Lucky, Aaron Sharg, our fantastic production assistants. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, WKR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day. And be easy, people.